To Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday, and it is the 14th of December in the year 2005, and it is good to be back with you again. I told you this last week, and for whatever reason this week it doesn't feel that way. I actually felt like literally a guest on the broadcast, and I have talked with Darren, and I have told him that I would be taking each Wednesday night now, and so we'll be visiting at least once a week this way, and that's, for me, it's lovely, and I hope for you too. Our topic tonight, let me share our spiritual message with you, because this is very appropriate to our subject matter this evening. This is from Matthew in the Bible. This is from chapter 18, and they were talking about the children. And Jesus said that whoso, this is in verse 6, talking about the children, whoso shall offend one of these little ones, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depths of the sea. I want to do that again. And I did leave a few words out, because they're alleging that Jesus said that anyone whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me. And I think that people would tend to take that literally and consider that a child who wasn't aware of a man named Jesus, then he wasn't going to be saved, or he wouldn't be wrapped in the love of that loving individual that we know as Jesus. So I leave those words out because I know that he loved all children. He said that whoever should offend one of these little ones, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depths of the sea. And I couldn't think of a more emphatic, I guess you might say, way to say that. And our guest this evening, our co-host, I probably should say, is Alan Watt. Alan, thanks for being here tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Uh-huh. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is interesting, because your voice was a lot louder.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And it's lost that volume again, so it seems like, I don't know, maybe tricks are being played, you know, with the telephone, Alan?
Well, that generally is the case with me, yeah.
Yeah, I know it. So therefore, if you can really speak up, and I'll tell you when the volume comes, because usually we get it back again in a little bit, don't we?
That's right. Uh-huh.
Okay, well, we were talking today about the Sovietizing
mm-hmm.
of the so-called educational system. Actually, it's
yeah.
the Sovietization of the world, isn't it, Alan?
It's the whole world, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we're under now, in fact, and I think Lenin was quite correct with that. He said that when the people and the politicians are debating social policies to do with health care, welfare, jobs, and so on, then they have effectively been Sovietized. And sure enough, every time we've got an election coming up here in Canada, a show election, you know, and the present Prime Minister, who's rerunning to get back in, has promised, not that it means much, but the promises count, but he's promised free daycare for everybody. And then they interviewed lots of women in the streets to see what they think, and saw, it's about time they did that. You know, they've been talking about it for years. It's time they did that. So in other words, the people have been Sovietized when they expect the government to bring up their children for them, you know. That's a good example of Sovietization. They don't see it as government intrusion. They see it as a benefit to themselves by the government to taking care of the children for them.
Yeah, and they have no idea what is in store for their children.
Oh, they have no idea about anything.
I know.
In fact, most of them today who have children, if you mentioned the Soviet, they wouldn't know what you meant.
I know it.
You know, and or communist or Marxist policies, and they have no idea at all. Yeah.
Well, actually, Soviet means council, doesn't it?
It supposedly means rule by council, and so a collection of councils ruling, you know,
uh-huh.
And that was the front, of course, that was placed to the people initially, so that they would accept the Soviet policies. But in reality, it was never run by the people. You'd have councils, authorized councils by the government, of course, just like the NGOs that are registered with the United Nations. They're authorized NGOs who will go along with the UN policies. It was the same thing in the Soviet system. In fact, that's what we have, is a duplication of the exact same system. That the NGOs pretend to speak on behalf of the people, so they get all the airtime and all the media publicity.
Oh, yeah.
But really, no one ever stops and says, well, how can it be a democracy when these people aren't voted by the people to be in any position?
Well, you know, of course, people don't understand it when they join these organizations.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the Chamber of Commerce, Alan. And I have talked about this before, I know. The Chamber of Commerce is not just a local or state or nationwide, it's worldwide.
Yeah.
And it is also international. It is, think about this. This is when it really hit me about the NGOs, because the UN says that what they're lacking for actually to have world government is the parliament of the people.
Yeah.
And the NGOs are, I believe, are considered that now, because anybody, any even small business owner, as I was, that mm-hmm. joins the Chamber of Commerce, and you just do it because everybody does it. And it's whatever. I did it when I had my business.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, every single member of the Chamber of Commerce, when that international representative speaks at UN councils and things,
yeah.
he's allegedly representing every single one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the voice of the people. That's the true parliamentary government for the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And the Soviet man, I've quoted this book before, The Cogs in the Wheel. This was written by Mikhail Heller after, quote, perestroika in Russia occurred with Gorbachev, the formation of Soviet man, and basically it's a worldwide movement. Soviet man is a whole new, according to them, is a whole new species,
mm-hmm.
a biological species,
yeah.
and they said that it had taken millions of years for man to evolve, I guess you would, to Homo sapien,
mm-hmm.
and it took them only 60 years
yeah.
To do this. And he quotes Trofim Lysenko. Mm-hmm. He says that in our Soviet Union, people are not born. What are born are organisms. We turn them into people, tractor drivers, engine drivers, academicians, scholars, and so forth. And the author says, Mikhail Heller says, in the course of 70 years of building socialism, the regime has succeeded in, quote, making, end quote, making people who have lost all interest in work because they're convinced that those who made them are obliged to guarantee their needs once they've adapted themselves to life in special Soviet conditions.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you were talking about. when parents say, oh, yeah, well, it's about time you're giving us, you know, free free daycare. Take our children and take care of them.
Yeah, that's a Soviet mindset where our government's there to take over from everything that you do or start or whatever and free up your time so that you can go and work and pay more taxes to the same Soviet system.
And if people understood that to them it is true that we are nothing but organisms, as you've said so many times, Alan, they've given us our culture, every culture.
Sure.
And you remember one night we were on the air and it occurred to me, it's like the world is their petri dish.
Yes.
And we are the organisms here on planet Earth, and they're culturing us the way the scientists culture the organisms in petri dishes.
Sure.
And Stalin is quoted here as saying, of all the valuable forms of capital in the world, the most valuable and the most decisive are people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where all the labor comes from, and it's exchanged through money systems. It's energy, really, and time, which you can then take from the people through taxation. And it keeps the whole system together. Money is the key to everything, you know. Everything. And to their armies that enforce this system everywhere. You couldn't have an army if all you had were a few tons of turnips to barter. Nobody would want to hang around. You
know? That's right.
But you give them the money and you give them the prostitutes that they can hire and so on, and you keep the army together if you feed them well enough. And that's what they've done for thousands of years. You know? So that's the reality of it all. It's money is the key to the whole artificial system. I always thought it odd that in Genesis, as the rivers flew out of came out of Eden, in allegorical form, of course, it said, and outside there was lots of gold, and I think it was onyx or something. Now, why would a creator be caring about gold being outside there, lots of gold?
Right.
That tells you it's a man-made system. It's not a creator-made system.
Right.
And that's the key to that. And then when you realize
that so-called God in the Old Testament is not creator.
No, he's a big banker.
Yeah. A big banker.
We also be caring about gold being there. and they have their coding as well in Genesis for the two types of humans. Well, actually, one is human, one isn't. And you have the first Genesis 1, which is centers around, in the beginning he made man and woman and his same image created he them, and that's the occult meaning in the Talmud that the God is both male and female, so he reproduced himself in the perfect sameness into man and woman,
male and female.
But then he goes on in the second one, but there's nobody to till the soil, so he creates Adam and then Eve. And see, we are not classed as man, you see. See, if you're not one of the upper elite family lineages, you marry in common, etc., you don't have your mates picked for you through genealogical charts, then you are not classed as man. That's the big, the occult meaning behind that. That's why they asked Jesus, are you a son of man?
So Alan, is it different to say human and man?
Human, again, has a double play on it. Because the worker bee comes from the root human comes from the same word as humus.
As what?
Humus, the earth, you know.
Oh, earth man.
And so he was made of earth, and he wasn't made of the pure sameness of the deity. That's what it means. And worker bees, of course, hum. So you have H-U-M as, you know, humus. And human, you know. So it's from that species, but it's not the total species, not the same species.
Uh-huh. So that's why in the Bible it differentiates man and human.
Yes.
Because there are different times that man is used
mm-hmm.
and different times I think, that human is used.
That's right. And that's why, as I say, you have the two versions in Genesis. It's not a mistake. It's the occult, the esoteric message there, that the ones who were born in the sameness of the deity, man and woman, that's all it says.
Male and female created he them.
Uh-huh.
Was that a hermaphrodite?
Yeah, uh-huh. Uh-huh. And it also means that they were not workers, you see. It doesn't say that he made them for a purpose.
Uh-huh.
But then you find later that there's no one to till the soil, to work the soil. So poor old Adam gets made, and that's the real esoteric. So the ones who classify themselves as man or son of man belong to the higher order, you see. That's what it means.
Isn't that
it's
what...
It's always been like that.
Isn't that what they... attribute Jesus to saying that he is the Son of Man?
That's right.
So what is that?
See, you'd have to, because they were of a higher order of being, supposedly, in the esoteric. They still believe that today with the elite families who have their mates chosen from them from the same genealogical trees, going way back for thousands of years. That they are a superior type being, and they have the right to call themselves man.
Well, did Jesus refer to the people as man? I mean, he did say, you know, that all who do my Father's will are my family, my brothers, my sisters, my mother.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I recall that you had said that, and you know, I have read in different books that he had studied. You know, the quote, it's called Mystery Religions, but that, you know, all that time that we weren't given any information about where the heck he was from the time he was, 13 till he started his, quote, ministry. And you said that he was an adept and that he turned renegade on them and was actually revealing to the population, anyone who had an eye to see and an ear to hear, he was revealing to them the truth. That
yeah, he was giving out the mysteries. Yeah.
That the priesthood did not want people to know, and basically is that we are spiritual beings with a tremendous creative ability and power within us.
Yeah.
I have to get these dogs out of here. They're wrestling and they're making me nervous. I'm going to put them in the mudroom. Gosh, there was another thought I had. I got to get... Come on, girls. Oh, they're not even following me. They know what I'm going to do, Alan.
Oh.
You know what I'd like you to do? If you would, give our listeners your address, your phone number. You know, in that first book that you wrote, Cutting Through, you give evidence of the fact that come on, get up, Mariah, out. The hermaphrodites?
Yeah.
And so you do that while I'm doing this, okay?
Okay, Doug.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, there are three of these books I've written. And I go through the ancient histories of the religions and the esoteric religions, which always accompanied them, right to the present time. And the third one continues that and goes into the ancient money techniques and who used it and so on and how they took over countries even thousands of years ago. So these books are available for $25 each, and preferably if you can pay in an international postal order from your post office. It has to be international for me to cash it here. And you send them to the $25 each, and there are three of them. You can either order one or them all. And the address is Alan Watt, W-A-T-T.
And it's A-L-A-N.
Yep. And the address is Site 41, which is S-I-T-E, 41, Box 4, Estaire, which is E-S-T-A-I-R-E. That's like Fred Astaire with an E in the front. Ontario, Canada, and the postal code is P for Peter, 3 for the Trinity, I guess, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1.
And then that's say that all again without the...
Yeah. So that's Alan Watt, Site 41, Box 4, Estaire, Ontario, Canada, P3E4N1. And my telephone number for anyone who wants to contact me is 705-695-0416.
Alan?
Yeah?
Is there any particular time in the evening, is there any limit at the time of you would prefer people not to call?
It can be dodgy around 9 o'clock or so.
Okay.
Prefer between 7 o'clock, if they're going to call, 7 o'clock to say 7:30, 8. Yeah.
Yeah, because your conversations sometimes get very involved.
Yes.
Okay.
And often everyone's stuck in different areas and levels, and you have to sort of figure out their mindset to get around all the barriers that have been set up there. So that you can make things as easily understood as possible in the shortest time. So
did you say? Sorry. Did you say that it either has to be an international postal money order or a cash, because you can accept cash, but
yeah,
not a personal check and not a U.S. postal money order, or you wouldn't be able to use it.
Yeah, it's harder that way, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you for that. There's something I would like to do. I've got two places in this book that I would like to quote from tonight. And for our listeners, if you might be interested in this, I believe that this was published by Knopf Publishers. I don't believe you'll find it in bookstores. I found it at a big, huge barn sale. But I think you could find this book on abebooks.com. It is titled Cogs in the Wheel. And it is by Mikhail Heller, M-I-K-H-A-I-L, Heller, H-E-L-L-E-R. This is a gold mine. In fact, Alan, when I got the book and started reading it, it was really the wrap-up for me of the understanding of what they're doing to our children in the so-called educational system.
Yeah.
And when I called Charlotte Isabeat and told her about it, she did get a copy of the book. She said it's a jewel, a gold mine for people to read. But let me quote. Here's one quote I want to share with our listeners and with you. This is a speech dealing with the proposal for a new program and with the main directions to be taken by economic and social advance in the USSR up to the year 2000. Gorbachev set out with admirable clarity the aims of the ruling party. Listen to what he said and see if that reflects what's happening in the U.S. today. He said, our party must have a strong social policy embracing every aspect of a man's life, from the conditions in which he works and lives, cares for his health, and occupies his leisure time, to his attitude to social classes and other nationalities. And the author said, to embrace every aspect of a man's life is to continue and develop on the threshold of the third millennium Stalin's dream of people as cogs who, quote, keep our great state machine in working order. And that is a quote here on the first page. This was part of the introduction. Joseph Stalin is quoted as saying, I drink to the simple people, ordinary and modest, to the cogs who keep our great state machine in motion. And then Khrushchev said, someone must keep an eye on the cogs. And Gorbachev said, our party, well, I just read it, must have a strong social policy embracing every aspect of a man's life. And remember when you were talking about this thing worldwide, and I knew I had read it in here, and I found it before we went on the air. The Soviet man, as they call it, the new man, because it's a whole new biological species.
Mm-hmm.
And here, okay, where am I going? Okay, in 1982, the French critic Louis Marcorellis expressed his amazement after seeing a Soviet film at the Venice Film Festival. He said, "The protagonist and the director are like visitors from another planet and another era." That's end quoting him, and then the author says his astonishment was understandable. But if he had looked more carefully... Now, this book was written in the 80s, Alan, published, I think, 83 or 87, something. I don't know. Just a minute. Okay. 1988, okay? Listen to what he says here. He says, if he had looked more carefully around his own country, or Italy, or any other country of the non-Soviet world, he would have discovered in its people many of the qualities of Soviet man, or a readiness to acquire them. Yep. It is remarked that wherever a Soviet-style regime is set up, it immediately undertakes to create the new man. That's capital N, capital M. Mm-hmm. It says, when the North Vietnamese army entered Saigon in 75, the, quote, formation of the new man, a new type of people and a new mentality, began immediately, as the 1983 statutes of the Institute for Cultural Relations with France in Ho Chi Minh City, formerly Saigon, made clear, said, quote, the only cultural and propaganda materials which can be imported, kept, and circulated are those which promote the creation of the new man in Vietnam. And in Mozambique, the new president announced, we are waging a class war for the creation of the new man. So we've talked about this before, but you know, when you don't get details like this or quotes from people, it's almost kind of a generic type thing to say that the Soviet Union was a huge, huge laboratory for the making of the new biological species called Homo Sovieticus, and now it's a blueprint that is being used all over the world to create their new man.
Yeah, it is.
And they're doing it. They're doing it so well and so thoroughly with the children in these indoctrination centers, aren't they, Alan?
Yeah, they are. Most of the Soviet techniques actually didn't come from Russia. They came from Britain, you know.
Okay.
And
but they had the people in the Soviet Union were so, at that time, so oppressed.
Oh, they had no
and
choice.
So under the thumb that it really was the perfect place for them to use those techniques, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You had a caged laboratory.
Right. They were in a cage.
And that no one could say anything or do anything without permission. And of course, I think it was Eleanor Roosevelt went to Russia on her tour. And her first stop was to see Pavlov. She said that was her hero, because he basically, most of the experimentation wasn't done just on animals, it was humans. And he implemented the results of the experiments into the school system. He set up the school system there in Russia. So it was all Pavlovian techniques of indoctrination. But Pavlov himself had got a lot of his information from England.
Bertrand
Russell had gone over there.
Bertrand Russell. Let's talk about this on the other side of the break.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be taking a break here in just a few seconds. Folks, we'll be back with you with Alan Watt right after this. So stay with us, and thanks for being here.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Pass Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen, there's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and to our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188. Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite.
Horses and men, horses and men are on the field. They didn't yield, many have fallen here. Never forget.
Okay, folks, we're back with you. I've had people ask me if I had all of the words of the song "Sweet Liberty," and somebody had sent it to me at one time, but I don't know where it is. It's in there someplace in that studio of mine. That'll probably take me 5 months to get in order, and those words that we just heard were part of that song. The way that, and I know I'm off topic here, but it's on my mind, so I'll just share it with you. When I first went on radio, it was Dan Druck and I, and we called it the CDR, Information Hour, Council on Domestic Relations. And then when I went on Bill Cooper's network, I didn't have a name for the radio broadcast, and I was on an hour before Bill Cooper, so I called it the hour before the hour of the time. And then when I went on Republic Radio, they asked me what the name of the broadcast was. I said, I really don't have a name. I've never been able to come up with anything that said what I feel. And it was the engineer over at Republic Radio, the old Republic Radio, Andy. He called me back about 15 minutes after we had talked, And he said, how do you like Sweet Liberty? And I said, oh, wow. He says, I even have a song for it. And that's how this radio broadcast got its name. It wasn't something that came from me, but it, when Andy gave that to me, it just it said exactly what I would want it to say, Sweet Liberty. And and so I thought you might be interested in hearing that. Alan, you were mentioning, I was away from the mic, from the phone, during that break, but I don't know if Nicholas announced, and so I want to make sure I do this again for any of our listeners who may be new listeners. You've missed a lot, folks. I mean, we've been 10 years on the air, and now we're not on the air anymore, not the way we were, and many of the broadcasts in the past year or so have been done with Alan, although, you know, I have had other guests on. Nicholas at firstamendmentradio.com, which is, what, of course, from where we're broadcasting, is offering to you the entire year of Sweet Liberty broadcast. That's for a week, for 52 weeks, for $120 on a CD, and that's actually less than a dollar an hour. And so for any of you who are new listeners, it might be a wonderful way for you to be able to kind of get up to speed as to what we've presented in the past, and that's only 1 year. But if you contact Nicholas, I think it's just, I'll tell you, Alan, I know I've told you this before, but it makes me feel very relieved to know that those broadcasts have been made available to people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because as you said, I think last week or maybe on a phone conversation, it has been more of a tutorial than, you know, the standard type, you know, news broadcasts and stuff like that.
Yeah, we went back from to the ancient times and studied all the religions, went around them all, the creations and what they had to do with anything, and brought us all up to the present stage. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's just impossible to repeat it all.
It's a unique series, really. If it's for radio, it's definitely unique.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that there was a reason why Sweet Liberty was listener-sponsored for seven full years, actually about 7.5 years. And it was because of the nature of the... It certainly wasn't the wonderful shortwave reception that we got.
No.
Because people were even sponsoring it when they would write and say, I can't hear you. And we had such a problem with WWCR and the reception. But yet they continued to sponsor it. And I did a rough, just a guesstimate, over those years, the cost to our listeners was right around probably $250,000 that our listeners sponsored this broadcast. So it was certainly worth it to enough people, wasn't it, Alan?
Yeah, and you don't have the... You see, I don't think it's possible to take on advertising and then speak truthfully about things, because even the products and the advertising are related to some of the topics we end up discussing.
I know.
And so you couldn't even be honest, you see, if you take on advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
That's the unfortunate reality of life. Everything comes with its own censorship package, you might say.
Yes. And then when I did take on a sponsor, North American Urban Spice, they paid for 1 month's advertising, and literally cheated our listeners, I would say, because our listeners listen to me anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes a night talking about North American Urban Spice and their products, and $2,900 that Cass Ingram absolutely refused to pay. And asserted that he had never paid for advertising ever anywhere on any broadcast. I had an $800 check from them for that first month. That's the only one I got.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my wonderful experience with an advertiser that I actually thought was a company that had integrity, and the individual who owns the company that it was a good product. It's way overpriced, but it's a good product, or I would never have, you know, approached them.
Yeah.
And I understand now that North American Urban Spice is a major sponsor of some of the broadcasts on Statmiller's network.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So anybody who buys from them is paying probably four times. I found this out, you know, from people calling me, and even Cass Ingram himself admitted that theirs wasn't the only product, you know, and that was basically the oregano oil and forms of it,
yeah,
that were viable, and it was quality.
Mm-hmm.
But people who buy from him are buying from a thief,
uh-huh,
and a liar,
mm-hmm,
and they're paying much more for the product than they have to, because you can get oregano oil in your health food stores. Okay, I got us really off the track here, and I didn't mean to do that. You were talking about Eleanor Roosevelt going to Russia.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And Pavlov.
Yeah, that was her hero. She always wanted to meet Pavlov, the guy that was breaking all the ground on human conditioning techniques. And that's when she mentioned that the children on their way to school in the Soviet system don't have the spontaneity, or individual spontaneity, that you'd see in American children. He says that they're so well behaved and well ordered. In other words, that they were like robots.
Well ordered.
And she thought this was just wonderful, because these are going to be the future citizens. So if you make them into robots as children, then you have good robots as adults, you see.
Yeah.
And that's really what they're after in this system.
Do you think she was kind of like FDR's handler, so to speak?
Oh, I'm sure that she had a lot of input there, yeah.
Of influence. She wrote a book in 1938 titled, yeah, This Troubled World. Uh-huh. And in it, here's a little quote that she made, or that I have here. She said, "Our real ultimate objective must be a change in human nature."
Yeah.
"And when we have achieved a majority of the people of this type, then we can hope for success."
Yeah, they got to, in other words, take all the defense mechanisms out of every individual in order to rule them without any flack, you see. And that's what they really have been after all this time, is to get a masses of people with no real individuality, no self-preservation mechanisms left working. And that way you'll be a good domesticated sheep, you see.
And I believe that a lot of people, Alan, even a lot of our listeners,
mm-hmm,
that because we have talked so in the past about the educational, the indoctrination, and what they're doing to the children.
Yeah.
And yet I know that so many of our listeners, even though they hear it, maybe they don't disbelieve it, it doesn't really just really click with them. When they put their children in these government schools, they are handing them over to the enemy.
Yeah.
And I think that they believe that they, because the values that they're giving their children at home,
mm-hmm,
they believe that their children aren't going to be victims of this. And what they don't understand is that the technique has been so long in the making, and that anything that they try to give their children at home is going to be wiped out of those little minds. And in fact, there have been people who have said, "I don't even recognize him as my son or my daughter." They just can't figure out what's going on with their children, and they have their children in those government schools.
Yeah, Bertrand Russell got a British Royal Charter at the beginning of the 1900s to set up experimental schools where he really could do whatever he wished, and he was initially, being one of the upper elite in Britain, they initially wanted to go along with Plato's old plan and the Soviet plan, which is one and the same thing, of taking children from their parents at birth, rearing them in government nurseries, basically. And so eventually children would never know who their parents were. That had been their plan for a long centuries, actually.
And actually,
Bertrand Russell's agenda was to test any other means that might be just as successful. And so in these experimental schools, they developed techniques, and we're talking 1901, you know. They developed techniques where he said, we will no longer have to separate the children as their old ideal. He said instead that if we can get the children at the age of two for at least 4 hours per day, he said, we can condition them so scientifically that even if they spend the rest of the day with the parents, whatever moral indoctrination the parent tries to instill in that child will simply not take, he said.
And Bertrand Russell was an advisor, or I don't know, is he dead now?
Yeah.
Okay, well, he was an advisor to UNESCO. And UNESCO
yeah,
is the for our listeners, UNESCO is the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization. And they it is actually referred to as the World School Board. What do they call it?
Well, it's to create a common world culture.
Yeah.
And it's through education. And I know you remember the MK Ultra experiments that have been declassified now, that took place in Canada in the 1960s with Dr. Ewan Cameron, and the CIA paid for all these experiments on mental patients, psychiatric patients, on mind control. Well, Dr. Cameron, when he left there, he went to work for UNESCO. And he was also in charge of various other United Nations children's organizations. So it makes perfect sense when you follow these guys, these mind manipulators. Here he was working and getting paid by the CIA in collusion with the Canadian government to do all kinds of evil experiments on psychiatric patients. And he went straight into the United Nations and UNESCO. So you see, these guys are monsters, and you just follow their tracks where they go, and you know that the authority to do so, and that the doors are open for them, and there's lots more guys like Cameron involved with UNESCO, because that was the whole idea, to create a common type of human being that would be passive, have no individuality, and would have no real defense mechanisms left. They would be very obedient and passive, and they would do what they're told by the scientific elite who would run the world. So this is an old agenda. Bertrand Russell also, and you'll find that information in it was a book called Roads to Freedom, and the other one was Education and the Good Life by Bertrand Russell. And he tells you about his experimental schools and education and the good life and all the different techniques he had tried. And, of course, they passed that on to the Soviets.
Roads to Freedom, and what was the other one, Alan?
Education and the Good Life.
You know, that's another one that people might be able to find at ABE Books. I don't think I've ever gone in there that I haven't been able to find a book, out of print book that I've been looking for. And it's amazing that they're so reasonably priced, because the people that are selling them don't understand what treasures they have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so abebooks.com is a wonderful place to look for these things.
Yeah.
Education for the Good Life.
Education and the Good Life.
And the Good Life. Isn't that sick? The Good
Life.
Well,
remember what they say. See, freedom is slavery. War is peace.
Yeah.
And Roads to Freedom is Roads to Slavery for the people, but freedom for the elite who run the show.
You know, I'm seeing that it's 10 minutes before the hour,
uh-huh.
And we used to do this on the air when we had 4 days and then 3 days, we'd get into a conversation that's so important that you know you haven't completed it when the hour is up.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to continue it the very next day because you lose that continuity. And since we're only going to be 1 hour a week, I want to say right now that I would like to pick this up. I mean, unless something more important comes up, I can't think of anything more important than what we're talking about right now, because we're talking about the minds of the future.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what they're counting on. I have another quote here I'd like to share. This comes from a... Stanford University. They had a work titled International Understanding, and the preface in the book states, listen to this, folks, please listen to this. Few persons have appreciated the forcefulness of the agencies which have long been engaged in educating toward international understanding. And then they said in the foreword to the report on their progress, how it was being done, they said, the new world is now to be built, and the builder of this new world must be education. In such a task, one would have to change human nature with a patient and gradual reshaping of the public mind to bring their influence to bear on schools, on churches, literature, on business, on politics. The building of the new world has indeed begun.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's for the National Educational Association, which is part of the International Educational Association, was set up to do. You give a uniform indoctrination in all the same topics with the same outcomes, which are mainly emotional based. Most education now is emotive indoctrination. So the emotions fix in their minds the actual topic or conclusion of the topics. It's not a rational conclusion, it's an emotional topic they're given skillfully, and they'll remember that. So whenever you mention a particular word or name, they'll respond emotionally, and the logic will never ever kick in to actually dissect anything to find out a proper point of view. It's a scientific technique once again, you know. Well understood,
scientific.
Well practiced, and well implemented.
Yes, and that's what I hope that maybe our listeners will understand, is that it is a scientific... you mentioned Pavlov earlier.
Yeah.
Iserby wrote a book called The Skinnerian Something, and she was, referring to B.F. Skinner.
Mm-hmm.
And she refers to the, quote, Skinner box. This man, because he did the same type of, evidently, work that Pavlov did,
yeah,
with the mind conditioning and that. He built the box and put his own daughter in it, Alan.
That's right. Yeah.
And the woman, I don't know all the details of it, but I did read that she wound up committing suicide at the age of 21.
Mm-hmm.
And so the methods that are being used in the schools today were brought forth by these monsters. A man who could put his own child in a box,
mm-hmm,
and keep her there for evidently a very long period of time.
Well, see, these people are psychopaths, and they're chosen for that. You might call it a gift. You might call it a gift. Their ability to be completely dispassionate about anything. They cannot feel for others, you see.
They cannot feel. They don't feel anything, Alan, do you think?
No, they see how people react. They can copy it. They can emulate it, but they feel nothing. And they are chosen for these particular traits. And they have psychological evaluations, and that's how they pick these characters to do what they do. These are the same guys who will dissect bodies and tie down chimpanzees and have them hit on the head so many times by, you know, hydraulic presses or whatever, and calmly stand and watch this happening and write down the step-by-step process. There's not an you cannot possibly even say that they're really human, you know.
No.
They are a separate species, there's no doubt about that. And in fact, they're the deviant creation, as they call it. It's the deviant creation that runs the world. And that's our problem.
Is it the deviant creation that was referred to in the Old Testament?
Yeah, there's a play on that. You have the worker bees in the ancient religion. All of the ancient religions had the beehive as a symbol of the perfect system of the royalty attended by the bureaucracy priests, you might say, the drones, and then you had the workers all below them. But you also have this play on Devi, which means holy, basically.
On what?
And an ant is a wingless bee.
A play on,
you know,
what?
It's a play on the holy, Devi, or Devi.
Oh, okay.
It means holy. And ant, of course, an ant is a wingless bee. An ant is not a worker bee as such. It's a cleanup. It comes up and cleans up after the bees have done all the work. So there's a lot of the esoteric combined in the English language, deliberately so, because the English language was created to contain all the esoteric traditions of ancient times.
Okay, I've lost something here. You mentioned Devi, D-E-V-I,
yeah,
as meaning holy. And what? How does that connect with the ants?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How does that connect with ants?
A deviant.
Deviant. Oh my God! A holy. Oh my God.
Yeah. See, these are all esoteric.
Well, see, you have to spell it out for me.
Yeah. And people would think, well, everything's coincidence. No, nothing is coincidence in the English language, because it's a fairly recent language, and Francis Bacon spoke about the creation of the new language of the future, which will be called English. And prior to him saying that, people in England spoke Old Saxon German. So teams of priests in his day actually put together the English language.
Well, the kings were ruled by the priests, weren't they, Alan?
Yeah, and the
they
priests,
were the priesthood was always present.
Yeah, they're the ones who keep the genealogical charts, decide who's marrying who, and all of that kind of stuff.
Well, not only that, I understand in those days, you know, because there was a lot of fighting going on. You know, if a king died, which of his offspring or bloodline was going to, you know, take the throne,
mm-hmm.
and without that king being literally sanctified, so to speak, by the priesthood,
uh-huh.
he was not considered a king.
That's right.
So the king that they were going to sanctify had to be lenient and leaning toward whatever it was that the priesthood was doing. And guess what? We're out of our hour. This happens all too often. Folks, Darren will be back with you on Monday and Tuesday next week. Do tune in. I've listened to Darren, and I've listened to him spellbound. And we will be back with you on Wednesday next week. Thank you for being here.
In America, we value our liberty. But there's a new movement quietly being pursued by politicians that will take away our precious freedoms. It's been deceptively named the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTAA. Proponents claim that their objective is to promote trade by removing barriers between the countries of North and South America. In reality, the FTAA is a raw power grab. It will lead to a new government